and welcome to another episode of the Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
You all right?
I'm not bad, you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. We're by the time you're listening to this, you may well know the results of the general election, but at the time of recording, we've got four more days?
Yep, nearly there.
Four more days and it'll all be over.
Well, it won't. It's never going to finish.
Will it? I mean, God almighty. As I said in last week's podcast, I've tried to avoid a lot of it, because it's just so annoying, isn't it, to
watch it really is.
Any of them. And last week I mentioned about the lies that we're being told, and they just seem to be getting worse and worse. And this time, you just wonder how stupid the politicians are.
Why, what's happened?
Well, did you see Corbyn this week?
What's he done?
He was caught out really lying about watching the Queen's speech at Christmas.
Well, he doesn't watch it.
Who watches it?
Well, I don't. No. I would have had him down as a man who definitely watched it.
No, I mean, he's not a monarchist, is he?
Yeah, still though, he's got to be interested, isn't he, in the Queen's speech?
No, he doesn't care about the royals. I don't think he's interested in the royals. He's a proper lefty, and he's probably a Republican.
So if that's the case, why are people so amazed that he's not watched it?
Well, it's not the fact that he doesn't watch it. It's just the fact that he tried to lie about watching it. So he was asked on an interview, will you sit down and watch the Queen's speech on Christmas Day? I suspect the question was loaded because they always expect politicians to give an answer. Well, no, of course not. Down with the royals. Hang the Queen. I mean, he's not going to say that, is he? Even if he believes it, he's not going to say it.
So how was he caught out?
So he said, we normally... And he had this look in his face. He was like a child who knew he was lying. And he went, yeah, we normally, we watch it in the morning. And the interviewer
Hang on a bit.
Yeah.
Well, first mistake.
The interviewer sort of said...
Unless he's watching last year's on record.
The interviewer said, well, you can't watch it in the morning. It's not until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then he just bumbled around like a little child. Just say you don't watch it, man.
What a strange thing to lie about.
I mean, if people want to watch the Queen's speech, that's fine. I have no problem with the Queen's speech. It's not something we watch in our household at Christmas, but it is a nice thing if people want to watch it. But if you don't watch it, just say you don't watch it.
There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
No, but this is what politicians do, isn't it? It's like, well, if I say I watch it, there's a few votes there. So just tell me the truth, mate. Come on.
Maybe, though, in his defence, maybe he was trying to think ahead and think, right, if I admit I don't watch it, yeah, then they're going to call me anti-royal and start bashing me for that.
He gets that
let's
anyway.
Just tell the white lie. Tell them I've watched it. I'll guess at what time it's on.
But it's always been 3 o'clock. It's all, even I know that. It's always 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't watch it.
The man is what, 67 years old, something like that. You must know it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm sure he said it with an up inflection at the end. I watch it in the morning.
Because, I mean, I don't watch it myself, as I've said, but I know everyone on earth surely knows it's at 3 o'clock
in
the afternoon.
Of course it's 3 o'clock.
How has he got to the age he is in the position he's in? And he's so oblivious of it.
Honestly. This, again, I said it last week. These are the options we've got in front of us, these lot that we're going for. And I was in such a mood the other day because I woke up to the news of another politician just being full of bile and hate.
And I'm surprised that you're surprised, to be honest.
I know, but I shouldn't be surprised. I shouldn't be surprised at the level of hatred and bigotry there is across politics at the moment.
Okay.
But she's a Tory candidate for Hastings and Rye, Sally Ann Hart.
Okay.
Right, who the other night at a hustings, bearing in mind this is a woman standing to be a Member of Parliament in the United Kingdom in 2019 into 2020.
Yeah.
Said, I don't think disabled people or those with learning difficulties should be paid the same as everyone else. They should be paid less.
Oh, why?
Well, they don't understand money. They don't understand money, and it's all about the work for them, isn't it? It's all about the work.
What does that mean? What does it mean it's all about the work?
I think what she's trying to say, it's about them feeling included. But what you're basically saying is, yeah, we're going to make you feel included, but then we're going to be exclusively bigoted and prejudiced against you.
So hang on a minute. Is she saying that because they don't understand money,
yeah,
which it can't be true as a blanket statement for all of the disabled people?
Okay, but this is a learned woman, surely, standing for the Conservatives in Hastings and Rye.
I mean, surely. I mean, I think I'm still getting it wrong. Is she sort of saying, because they don't understand money, it's all right, we can pay them less?
That's basically what she's saying.
Or is she saying that the work they do isn't as good. Sounds horrible, whichever way she meant it.
I mean, it's just good. Outrageous. And I don't know. She's also being investigated for anti-Semitism now.
Oh.
So anti-Semitism and bigotry is available across all parties. other parties do provide that if that's what you're after. But my God, how is this woman being allowed to stand? Surely a Conservative Party who would want to be seen to be at least in the Victorian age. I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg dresses like that. So, I mean, that's presumably where we're up to with them. Would get rid of her and say, well, we can't have her. She's got to go.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen that. Now, I've got a brother who works. He is disabled.
He's not being paid.
He has a slight learning difficulty. And if I was to say to him, you probably shouldn't be paid the same as the other people that do your jobs.
I'm interested. Did she try and offer any reasoning or justification or defence of this statement?
Well, no, I think all she said was that...
there is any, by the way. I just want to know if she tried to.
Well, it's all about the work for them. It's all about just being involved. It's like, come on. 2019, nearly 2020.
It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it's such a draconian, Victorian point of view. I mean, she'd have them locked up in bloody sanatoriums, wouldn't she? Like the old days, honestly. These are the sort of people that we've got ahead of us, and I'm so depressed about the whole thing.
Well, that is depressing.
So on Friday morning, when we wake up to whatever the result is, you just think, God, whoever it is, we've got 5 years of that. 5 years of it, whoever it is. It is such a... I'm sorry to start this podcast this week on a depressing note.
Oh, that's okay.
But I sort of feel that nobody is... Just get this woman and say no. I hope that whoever else is standing in that constituency wipes her off the floor, wipes off the face of the earth when it comes to the vote. She doesn't deserve to be anywhere near Parliament.
Trevor, are you familiar with the Turnip Prize?
The Turnip Prize?
Yeah.
No.
It's a play on the Turner Prize.
Oh, because that was this week, wasn't it? The Turner Prize.
Yes, but the Turnip...
They shared the awards this year. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see it, no.
The four people that were up for the Turner Prize all wrote to the organisers and the judges and said, there's so much division in the world at the moment, we would like to share the prize between us all.
Oh.
And the judges thought about it, and yeah, it's a good idea. So they all walked away with 10 grand each and the Turner Prize between them. Nice gesture, I think,
isn't it?
In this day and age.
Oh, that's even nicer than this story.
Nice bit of uplifting news.
Well, I'm a Turnip Prize. You're encouraged to make crap art.
Oh, I'd be very good at this.
Using the least amount of things possible. And someone, basically, their name was... you might suspect this isn't their real name. Going by the name Fanny Scorcher.
Fanny Scorcher.
Yep. They produced a piece of work called Bushfire Down Under.
Okay.
And it was just basically a pair of ladies' underpants.
Yeah.
With a sort of burn hole in the crotch.
Right.
And
okay.
It was in honour of the bushfires in Australia. And in particular, a tribute to that woman who was seen in the news rescuing the koala from the fire.
Oh, no, I didn't see this.
Oh, no, it was on the news for a few days.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, there was this really brave, lovely woman who went in and rescued
her. Was she just
koala.
In her knickers?
I think she was in a bra. I think she whipped off her top in order to sort of wrap this thing up. No, I think it was more sort of risky. Oh. I don't think she was just getting a sweat on.
No, I thought she might pick up a bit of a tan when I'm saving the koala.
No, it was to wrap up the koala, who was a bit scorched and singed. But he's all right now, I think, which is lovely. So this piece of art has been dedicated to it. I mean, part of me thinks it might be a little bit insensitive to the entire bushfires in Australia.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
You know, it won, so there you go.
But art is there to send a message, to say something.
Yeah.
And what it's saying is be aware of the fires in Oz. So you could say it's actually drawing attention to the terrible plight of those living in the Sydney area.
Yeah.
Where it's now a huge fire, isn't it? Three fires have converged to make one giant fire. I don't see how they're going to get this thing out.
Yeah, who knows?
What else was up for consideration for the Turnip Prize?
Well, there was a Thomas the Tank Engine toy, which was put in a saucepan.
Okay, any reason?
Yes, there was a reason.
What's the reason for that?
That was in honour of Thomas Cook going bust.
Okay.
The pun was Thomas Cooked.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, that's clever.
Yeah, it's quite clever. Then there was a piece of lettuce.
Right.
Which I think was some sort of... tribute to Brexit, I think.
How can what a bit of lettuce?
Romaine.
I still don't get it.
You don't get it.
You're familiar with... I was going to say a breed of lettuce. I don't know. Yeah, breeds of lettuce. Yeah, I breed lettuces.
You're not familiar with romaine lettuce?
No, I always buy a...
You're not much of a foodie, are you?
No, I always just go straight for the... what do you call it? Iceberg. Straight for the iceberg. I am the...
Feels like this is what this podcast doing. Heading straight for the iceberg.
I am the anti-Titanic when it comes to... Well, no, it's not the anti-Titanic because it hit the... Thing, isn't it? I am just the Titanic.
No, it's this podcast, mate. Heading for the iceberg, right? So there is lettuce. You know, this doesn't work as a pun if you've never heard of romaine lettuce.
No.
Put it that way. But that fair was enough. The joke.
Okay, yeah. Romaine, yes.
Which, you know, there must be some sort of other joke in there about leaves, lettuce leaves.
Lettuce leaves, yes.
But anyway, I don't really understand.
Well, maybe it's an idea to... This is the thing about art.
I'm beginning regretting talking about the turnip price, I'll be honest.
But the thing about art, it's I'm not really into art hugely, right? I appreciate a nice picture, but a lot of art is just art. It is literally arty-farty nonsense in my mind, but you know, who am I to discuss art? I'm a bloody Philistine when it comes to art. But maybe what the artist is saying, it's time to come together as a nation. So you've got leave and remain in one sound structure of a lettuce leaf.
Maybe that was it.
So it's a good point to be making. This is what art should do. It should elicit conversation.
Maybe not this conversation.
Why not? What is this conversation? Have you ever been into art?
No. Didn't you once... I'm sorry if I'm making this up, but didn't you once sit on an art exhibit? was there something...
I'm not sure that was an art exhibit.
wasn't there some story, unless I'm completely misremembering this, yeah. You told me you wandered into an art exhibit, a museum of art or something, and you wandered into one room, and there was a pile of bricks?
Oh, yes.
And you sat on it?
I didn't sit on it.
You didn't sit
I think
on
you're,
it.
What you might be doing is mixing up a couple of my art stories.
Okay.
welcome to the Trev and Ben Art Podcast. I'm just changing my voice. We can appeal to a different audience now. this is a more sort of... We're bringing in the cultured audience, so I'll put on my art voice.
Yeah, can we get that... what's that Tony Hart music?
Oh, Vision On.
Yeah, get that on.
I don't think we got the copyright to use that. But, you know, I do the whisper as if I'm in a gallery.
Okay.
Whisper as if I'm in a gallery and looking at the art. No, but I think what you might be doing is mixing up a couple of stories. So, yes, when I was at school, because I did art at school, and I was dreadful at it, and my art teacher told me as such, so he wasn't really the encouraging voice I needed when it comes to express myself artistically. Okay. In fact, I've just discarded one of my bits of art from school. I found it in the cupboard under the stairs that I've just cleared out.
Oh, yeah?
And I had to... I mean, it was bloody awful. How I've kept it for all these years, I don't know, or why I've kept it. It was... We had to make a samurai boot. And
okay.
I got an old welly and just stuck loads of bits of odd material, bits of rubber... bits of metal, just stuck it on this boot.
What an odd thing to choose. Surely the samurai thing is a samurai sword, isn't it? No, yeah. You don't think samurai boot when you think of your samurais.
I don't know whether we had to just make something from a samurai's uniform, and I chose the boot because it looked probably the easiest and the sort of the most accomplishable with the materials that I had available to me. But yes, so we had to go to the art galleries when I was doing my GCSE art, and we went to the Tate, and I walked into a room that I thought was closed for decoration because it had a pile of bricks in it, which became quite a famous piece of modern art.
So there were bricks in there,
yes,
and they were part of the exhibit.
They were part of the exhibit, but there was also these screens up. So that's partly why I thought it was closed. It looked like these screens were just in the middle of the room, but that was some sort of bit of art that you had to walk through.
Oh.
And I almost missed this whole room out that was on our question and answer sheet or whatever we had to fill in. And I think at that moment, I thought, what is this? Mm. What is this? It's a pile of bricks. I could do that. And that's the thought I had about art for so long, particularly modern art. I just thought, it's just rubbish. It's like someone just put a pile of bricks down. What are you trying to tell me?
So I completely made up the part where you sat on it.
Well, yes, you did. You did. But just going back to that, right? So I absolutely threw the idea of modern art out, right?
Yeah.
I just thought, I can't be dealing with it. I can look at a picture by Da Vinci and sort of appreciate the brush strokes, but I hate the pretension that goes with art. So I think it was possibly on that visit, we're standing at one painting, and I'd heard all these poncy people talking about the art. So I said to my mate, I'm just going to make up a whole lot of shit here. And so I stood there and I was going, oh, look at this. I don't know what the painting was. Look at the brush strokes, are immaculate. It's just extraordinary. And then this woman tapped me on the shoulder and I thought I was going to get a rollicking for being a bit loud in the art gallery.
Yeah.
And she went, oh, you've noticed, have you? And I thought, well, I was making it up. Just pretentious. Look at the brush strokes.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely picture of a horse or something. That'll do. So I threw the idea of modern art out. And then when I was about 18, I just started work and I had this conversation with someone I was working with about modern art. And I was just giving him, I could do that. And he sat me down, sort of gave me a bit of a lecture of modern art. And he said, the thing about it is you've got to remember that everyone says, oh, I could have done that, but you didn't.
Yeah, someone else did.
Someone else did it. So you've got to appreciate the fact that someone's given that some thought and come up with the idea of a pile of bricks for whatever reason, whatever message they were trying to give. So that changed my whole thinking, right? And I spent years of whenever anyone talked to me about it, or if I just happened to be out with someone and we ended up in an art gallery, I'd look at things and go, yeah, I sort of see what's going on there. And I tried so hard, but I didn't really believe in things I was saying. And then I went to New York, and this is the other story I think you might be getting confused.
Okay.
So I went to New York with a mate of mine, and we went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York. He wanted to go. Okay, so I thought, that's fine. We'll go and see that. And at the time, there was a woman called Marina Abramovich who had a whole floor dedicated to her work. Mm-hmm. But her main work on display was right downstairs as you got in. And it was a woman sitting on a chair.
Is that it?
And you were invited to sit opposite her, if you so wish, for 5 minutes. And she would just sit there and stare at you. Now, I didn't bother sitting down at the chair because there was such a queue. And I'm not queuing up to sit opposite someone. Yeah, this isn't art.
What was she doing? Was she just...
She was just sitting on a chair.
Was she allowed to move or not? Or
I think she could move, but she was pretty still from memory, just sitting on this chair in a sort of huge square. And then there was a chair opposite her and you could go and sit opposite her. What are you trying to tell me? Even at that point, I was thinking, all right, Trev, come on.
No.
Just give her a break here. She's trying to say something. And then we got to the floor where her main exhibit was. Now, I apologise if anyone who's listening to this likes Marina Abramovich. It was fucking awful.
What was it?
It was just... The first thing you saw was a naked man on a pile of bones. I don't know what she's trying to say with that.
Mm. When you say bones?
Well, they were obviously like skeletons, skeletal human bones. I don't know if they were real bones. I very much doubt it.
But okay.
Just a naked man lying on that. And then she does lots of video installations. And there was one of just her screaming into the camera.
I don't like modern art or people that claim to like it. And again, I'm sorry if that makes me sound like a philistine, but I just think it's pretentious, it's poncy, it's people pretending other things are impressive when they're not.
Yeah.
And there's too much money floating around in it that it's just not deserved, I don't think.
But I said to my mate, I said, I've got to leave this floor. If you want to finish seeing this exhibition, but I can't deal with this. I had to leave. It was doing my head in. I don't see how that's art. There was another one. A lot of nakedness.
Mm.
There was one with a naked man and a naked woman standing opposite each other, just staring at each other. What? That's not art.
No.
I don't mind if it's just not bullshit.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just don't make it bullshit, mate. Give me a bit of art that I can kind of understand and know what you're talking about. But going back to school days and art and having to go through my whole artistic life being ridiculed by the teacher. And I was so disappointed that I was working on this thing. I can't remember what they called it. You had to try and give the idea of movement in a picture that was kind of a 3D collage type picture.
I can do that. If you just draw someone running and put speed lines behind them, that's how I do it.
That's not 3D, that's not a collage, is it?
Yeah.
So I had to find a creative way of putting movement into the picture.
Mm.
So I remember it was like a garden scene and I had a cat in the scene and I thought, oh, here's a way that I can do it. What I'll do is I'll get lots of pipe cleaners as the cat's tail and put it in different positions. As if the tail is wagging.
Right.
And I was really happy with it, really pleased with it. And you think, yeah, I've got this, nailed this, that's movement. Mm. You get that cat's tail, looks like it's moving like the clappers.
It's a weird piece of homework to be given.
Mr. Parker, my art teacher, comes up, looks over my shoulder, went, Smith, well, that's crap.
Oh.
Oh, thanks, sir.
That wow.
And I think at that moment, my heart to art was lost.
You know what I'd have done at that point? I'd have taken it, scrunched it up to show it that it's 3D, and then I'd have thrown it at him to show that it's moving.
I'd have shoved it up his arse and said, it's modern art, mate. If you don't mind, Ben, I just want to come back to politics just briefly.
Okay.
Because I know we got a little bit heavy earlier.
Yeah.
And I can't guarantee that we won't again. Sorry, it just makes me so angry that I feel this is the one place I can get it all out of my system.
I think it's important that you, you know, vent. Get it off your chest.
You should probably start charging me when I come round to record. It's like a therapy session for me. Well, I see what you provide as a charitable affair.
Okay.
And it's all about the work for you.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So on the lighter side of politics this week, we had Donald Trump over.
Oh.
He was in London. And... And he got the ump, didn't he?
Well, I missed this.
What do you mean you've missed this? It's the big news of the week. Donald Trump went off in a right old huff.
I didn't... I've got to be honest with you. It completely passed me by. He was here. I haven't really been watching the news this week, and I thought I'd have seen... You know, I know I live a bit further away from London these days, but I thought I'd have seen the old Donald Trump blimp floating above London somewhere. That would have been the indicator that he's here, kind of like the bat signal.
Yes.
The big blimp flying over London. Yeah. Or the twat signal. So he's been here and he's got the hump.
So he was here for a NATO summit.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So he was meeting all the other big leaders. Don't know how many were there, but, you know, some big names were there. Justin Trudeau of Canada, Macron, Angela Merkel. All the big guns.
Yeah.
All the big guns were here. The reason he got the hump was because people overheard other leaders gossiping about him.
Oh, okay.
So Boris Johnson, Trudeau and Macron, and I can't remember who else was there, but they were caught with a microphone talking about Donald Trump.
Well, you know, not to sympathise with Donald Trump, but it's never nice hearing people talk about you behind your back, is it?
Well, what they were saying wasn't awful, considering the things Trump says about people.
That's true.
You know, it wasn't awful. They were talking about the fact that he has these long, drawn-out press conferences.
Uh-huh.
And I think Trudeau said Trump's team's jaws just dropped to the floor as Trump takes all this time with a press conference. And it's just, you know what he's like? He's like a petulant child, isn't he?
Yeah.
So then Trump called Trudeau two-faced because Canada don't pay their part of whatever. I can't even remember what Trump was going on about. And then Trump cancelled his own press conference and said, that's it, I'm off. I'm packing up the toys. I'm going home.
And this is a meeting of the people running the world, essentially.
Yeah. It's like a little creche, isn't it? You look at it and you see them all, even the ones you thought you might like Trudeau. You know, I mean, you look at Trudeau. When he first came in Canada, we saw all that. You thought, wow, there's a politician that we would want. There's someone that, yeah, we aspire to that.
Yeah.
And then look at the last few months, pictures of him blacked up.
It's not gone well, has it?
Now he's overheard discussing Donald Trump behind his back, which I don't have a problem with, by the way.
No.
I think, you know, that's just human. It's like when you work, you tend to have to work with some people you don't like.
Oh, yeah.
And you talk about them behind their back, don't you? You know, it's just human. I don't think there's an issue with that. You should always be careful that you're not near a microphone.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It amazes me that politicians are still being caught out with this, because didn't it happen quite badly to, was it Gordon Brown?
Gordon Brown famously, of course.
With that bigoted woman. That's what he called her, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's comment. Right, yes. Yeah. Yeah, he got in the car, didn't he, and was talking to his spin doctor, whoever that was at the time. So how could you put me with her, that bigoted woman? Just think, come on, mate, your microphone's on.
Yeah.
Some other people have been caught out as well. There's a famous one of Ronald Reagan back in the 80s when... As he was doing his microphone testing, he used this comment. He said, "My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes."
Wow. I mean, most people, when we set up, it's 1-2-1-2. I'm saying that from now on. Every time.
It didn't go out live, but it was recorded, and it came out a little while afterwards. And again, you think you're the president.
Yeah, loose lips and all that.
In front of a microphone. Because had that have gone out, imagine the chaos.
I like it. It's kind of a ballsy thing to do.
It is quite a ballsy thing to do.
Yeah.
Because wasn't there a thing in Hawaii last year or a couple of years ago, where they suddenly announced that there was an imminent attack.
Some sort of imminent nuke or something? I can't quite remember what it was or how it happened, yeah.
And the place went absolutely mad. Of course it would. So anywhere, we learnt this when you do radio or whatever, anywhere where there's a microphone that's live, you just be careful what you say, because you never know when that's going to come back to haunt you.
Well, you say that. We have been caught out before, haven't we?
we have. when we were doing community radio.
Yes.
Yeah. And we left the microphones open while a song was playing,
and I think it was me uttering some of the foulest language.
It was awful. There was an awful moment when I looked down, I could see that the microphones were switched on, and we just uttered certainly one of the foulest words that you could say on the radio, and all the blood drained from me. And the thing is, I remember you phoning your dad, who was listening to it.
Yeah,
said, could you hear us talking? And he said, no, I could hear you laughing. And I thought, that's a bonus. But we couldn't hear the recording until the following day.
Yeah.
And I had about 24 hours of absolute fear that we'd been overheard. Thankfully, the music was drowning us out.
Yeah, you couldn't hear it.
But it's an awful moment.
It really was.
You do learn from that, although you soon forget your lessons. Mm. You're suddenly in a, you know, when we found doing the radio show every morning, you can be a bit tired some mornings, maybe a little bit grumpy, and you've got a little bit of equipment that's not working properly. And all you do is scream, for fuck's sake, just fucking work. And you think, oh God, is the microphone closed? Oh yeah, it's closed. Thank God for that. You know, and then you get all the old radio pros. So I never swear in a room where there's a microphone, yeah, just in case.
I've been told that quite a few times. I don't know why people keep telling me. Maybe I should just take the advice.
You overheard a microphone left open recently on the news, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was watching the BBC News and they were doing a story and they were talking about, it was a really horrible story about murders and someone with paranoid schizophrenia and all this. And as they're describing this guy, from nowhere, somewhere in the back room, someone's got a mic on that shouldn't be. And from the back, you just hear one of them say, oh, that looks like Keith, our librarian. Oh, poor Keith.
What's he being accused of? Murder?
He was accused of triple murder and being a paranoid schizophrenic.
Ooh. Mm. Okay. Well, poor old Keith being intimated there. So who was this? It must have been a producer or somebody in the gallery.
Never found out who it was. Never
found out.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that, though. I always remember hearing that. I was watching Match of the Day years ago. And this was in the days before they had commentators at every match. They used to have just some of the matches round up by a reporter. And there was a sports reporter at the time called Sue Thirl. And she used to do some of them. And on the Saturday night edition of Match of the Day, they'd obviously not listened through enough to edit it properly.
Okay.
So she was, I don't know what the game was, but she was saying, and then, you know, Kevin Phillips jumped up for another goal. Oh, shit. And left it in. By the morning repeat, it was gone, which I was very disappointed with. But I love stuff like that.
What happened off screen that she was shitting about?
Who knows? Who knows? Oh. Either she... That's ironic. Perhaps she'd fluff the line. I've also got a vague recollection of the TV presenter Nick Owen, who was on TVAM back in there, must have been in the 80s.
Okay.
And I saw an interview with him once, and I'm sure he was reminiscing about his very first show that he'd done. And he was so relieved when he'd done the final goodbye and the credits were rolling that he swore and said something like, thank fuck that's over, or something like that. And his microphone was still turned on.
Oh.
Kept his job, though.
Well,
you wouldn't these days.
No, that you'd. Well, there's proof of that, because there was some guy in America did it. He was really nervous for his first shoot to camera.
Yeah.
And they went live, and his first thing he said was, oh, fuck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then he went into his story, and I think he was sacked pretty much immediately.
That's awful, though, isn't it? He's been waiting for his chance.
Just
he's
got nervous,
it, and he's messed it up. And the trouble is, because I think we live in a society now, it's a mob culture, particularly with social media. People get on it, and it's like an old-fashioned hate mob turning up with pitchforks and torches.
Yeah.
That's what Twitter's become. He must be sacked. You know, sack people for saying that disabled people should be paid less. Sack people for things like that. But if someone just makes a genuine mistake, let's just all grow up a little bit.
Well, another thing is, an apology is never enough anymore. If someone comes out and apologises, it's not good enough. They have to lose their job, be fired, kicked out of the house, stone them to death. You know, it's never enough.
It's the society that we've got now, though, Ben.
I know.
We live in this very unforgiving society. And I don't know how that's going to change. It's the only way that life is going to get better, if we just become a little bit more forgiving. And it's a difficult one, because where do you draw the line, and what do you say is forgiving? Do you give people a chance? So, for example, like yesterday at a football match, Man City, Man United, there was some idiot who was allegedly making monkey taunts towards two black Manchester United players. You think, you moron.
Well, wasn't there a couple of Chelsea fans a while ago, and they got found by social media, and they had to lose their jobs, even though they apologised. Not that I'm saying that the apology was good enough, but I think it went a bit far, possibly, to get them to lose their livelihoods. But
well, this is the thing. Like, the guy yesterday, he's been found out on social media who he is, where he works. I think his company are now looking into
there
it.
There we go.
And I don't know how I feel about that, because the man is obviously an idiot.
It's a tricky one, because he is the idiot. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And don't make stupid racist taunts, and then nothing bad will happen to you. But I don't know. I don't really know. What do you think? Do you think it's...
I genuinely don't know how I feel about it, because it makes me so angry that people in this day and age can still have such horrible, vile views, and makes us just ridiculous to start making monkey taunts. Come on.
You know what? I think I'm changing my mind. I'm going to contradict myself. I do sort of think it's okay if you lose your job if you've been a complete twat.
Yes, because also, let's think about it. If you were employing somebody and you saw them doing that, you wouldn't want that person representing your company.
No, you wouldn't. So I think I've changed my mind on this.
But yeah, I don't. It is a tricky one. And I am calling for a more forgiving society.
See, we're just as guilty.
But yeah, we are.
It's just Twitter. You're right. It's a vile cesspit of a place, and we're at Triven Bay.
Well done. Well done. You're going to take over management of the Twitter feed this week. That's happening. But we were talking about people leaving microphones open. My favourite one of this election campaign has been Conservative candidate Lee Anderson. He's in Ashfield in Nottinghamshire.
Yeah.
He was being followed by journalist Michael Crick, who he's quite good, Michael Crick, I think. He was famously hit on the head by, was it Godfrey Bloomfield or something? He was a UKIP man who was just horrible.
I remember that.
And he smacked him over the head with a magazine or something.
Yeah.
So Michael Crick, I don't know, he's a bit eccentric,
and
he always
funny.
Finds himself in weird situations. But he was out on the campaign trail with this guy, and I don't think things were really going the Conservative candidate's way as they were knocking on doors, okay? So he thought what he'd do is he'd set up the next place to go. But again, he'd forgot he got his microphone on. So he walks away from the crew and everything, and he makes a phone call, not aware that he's being recorded, and he calls a mate, and he says that we're going to come round, basically make out you know who I am, that I'm the candidate, but not a friend, all right? Just make out you know who I am, but not... don't make it clear we know each other.
Right.
So they go around the guy's house, knock on the door. The guy opens the door, doesn't mention he knows the guy's a friend, but he says, oh, yeah, sure, the candidate. And he says, well, there's no way Labour ever going to get my vote again, before then heartily endorsing Mr. Anderson's policy to send problem tenants to Labour camps.
What? Oh.
I mean, again, these are the sort of people that are going knocking on doors saying, vote for me, yeah, send problem tenants to Labour camps. And his friend just came out with all this absolute right-wing rhetoric.
Right.
And you just think, what must be going through Mr. Anderson's head when he's hearing his mate basically dropping him in it? But he's dropped himself in it, because clearly this politician, I don't know whether he's actually got ideas of sending people to Labour camps or not, but again, it's nearly 2020.
Yeah.
We're not North Korea.
So was Michael Crick aware that he was going to his mate's house before they went? It was only afterwards in the edit they found this
audio. The crew were obviously aware, because they were hearing, or probably the sound man was hearing what was going on, but they didn't tell Michael Crick until
afterwards. Why wouldn't you tell him?
I don't know.
That could have made for a great confrontation.
But maybe it's because of the whole Perda thing that you can't be influenced. I don't know. I don't know whether he has to always take the absolutely neutral position.
Wow. So, and they Yeah, this was a friend of his thought repeating this thing would be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I know.
God.
I know.
You know, the good thing about racists is they're often so fucking thick that they're quite easy to find.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, the one thing when we started doing the Trev and Ben podcast, we said we won't swear too much on the podcast.
We've gone a bit over the top. This
well,
one.
Yeah, but I think this week they fucking deserve it. Do you follow your local news at all, Ben?
No.
Do you get a local newspaper through the door?
There is the East Grinstead Gazette or something or other, but I don't buy it.
Oh, you have to buy it?
That one you do, yeah.
Oh, we used to get a free newspaper where I live in Croydon, and that seems to have stopped now, so we don't get anything. And I'm not really that into following the local news that much.
No.
But I do go onto the local news website every now and again. And it's become really poor recently. It used to be owned by the local newspaper. They used to update it all the time. But it seems to have changed hands. And they sort of update it once a week now. So it's very difficult to keep on top of what's happening in your local area.
Right.
You know, and I'm really, really want to know what's happening. I really want to know what violence is erupting in Croydon this week. But I think it must be a pretty slow news week in Croydon this week. Because this was the headline in the Croydon section of the My London website.
Well, I love things
this
like
is the
this.
Headline.
Go on.
This isn't the little bit down the side. This is the main story. What it's honestly like driving around Croydon's worst roundabouts.
Oh.
They've sent somebody out to drive around some of the roundabouts in Croydon and review them.
Do you know what, though? And I'm going to admit this.
Yeah.
I know you're laughing at how stupid that is, but the first thing that popped into my head was, as a response to that, oh, I bet Lombard roundabout's on
Lombard
there.
Lombard roundabout is on there.
Yeah, there you go.
Lombard roundabout is on there.
Isn't that tragic? Like, I got sucked in by it.
Well, I've gone through two of these roundabouts today.
Have you?
Lombard and Purley Cross, which is two of the worst roundabouts in Croydon.
Yeah.
You used to be a driver in and around Croydon. What's your worst? It is a more interesting story when you start talking about it, isn't it?
Oh, it's so annoying. We started trying to laugh at it, but then we got really into it.
Suddenly I want to go and live in Milton Keynes where there's nothing but roundabouts. I think Swindon's got a famous roundabout, hasn't it? Is there a famous roundabout in Swindon?
How is a roundabout famous?
I'm sure it's like, is it called the Magic Roundabout? Is that in Swindon? Can you look that up
That's
for
Milton
me?
Milton Keynes, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Maybe. There's definitely...
We're going to get angry tweets now from Milton Keynes.
It's definitely not. It's in Swindon. The roundabouts we've got in Milton Keynes are perfectly round and they're not magic.
Oh, no, you're right. I do apologise, Swindon. It was. Yeah, the magic. Oh, God, that looks like a concrete dump, doesn't it?
I think it was.
You'd be pissed off if you live next to that thing.
Oh, come on. Now we're getting the letters from bloody Swindon.
Are we now? I feel like we're contributing to this terrible article.
So when you were a driver in Croydon, what was your favourite and what was your worst roundabout? Because this is the thing, right? I don't like the fact they've only gone with the negative here. I think there needs to be favourite roundabouts. I like a little roundabout.
I
don't like a big roundabout.
You mean a mini roundabout?
Not a mini one. I like the sort of mid-range roundabout. There's got a little bit of green in the middle, but just a little one. There's a couple on when I drive to you, once I've passed the big roundabouts, the Ann Summers roundabout, for example.
Yeah. It must have a proper name, that roundabout, but everyone just calls it the Ann Summers roundabout.
Yeah, yeah. People don't know what we're talking about. It's because there's the Ann Summers factory or head offices are there, and it just got a massive Ann Summers sign, so everyone just calls it the Ann Summers roundabout. It's not like there's people in the middle of it in lingerie, which would make it more interesting, but a little bit more distracting
cause that roundabout's bad enough.
Yeah, it would be awful.
I can't believe we're joining in talking about the worst roundabout.
But the thing is, you're like a politician, you're avoiding my question. Your favourite and your work, I haven't given you a chance to answer, in fairness. You know, I've turned into Andrew Marr, I'm just talking over you. What is your favourite and your worst roundabout of your drive? Maybe just not Croydon. Where your favourite? I'm just stop talking.
I can't name that many roundabouts. I don't know, favourite roundabout. One with traffic lights.
Oh, one with traffic lights. You're like a... Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to know where I'm talking about. So I can't describe... I don't know road names. There's one sort of around Wandsworth, and they've got this big structure.
Oh, I know the one.
I always call it the pretzel.
I used to have to go through that when I worked at the school over in Fulham.
Yeah, this big sort of pretzel-style structure in the middle of a roundabout. And you'd expect it to be a horrible place to drive, but it's got traffic lights on the roundabout. Can't believe we're joining in with this. So that's why that's my favourite roundabout, because there's no chance of an accident, really, you know when you go, when the lights go, oh God, I'm going to kill myself. And the worst roundabout here will be Lombards that I mentioned, because it was the one that sprang to mind.
Wow.
Our podcast has become this news article now. We're doing it.
The thing is,
unironically as well.
I'm sure. I bet there are roundabout enthusiasts who would be interested in this. Again, we're just trying to branch out to all kinds of audiences here. You know, if you're not into roundabouts, that's fine. I'm hoping that we've covered it.
I'm not into roundabouts.
No, you are. You are. You've just talked about your favourite roundabout in Wandsworth.
And that was after you pushed me and shouted at me for 5 minutes to tell you.
Subconsciously, it was there.
It
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Subconsciously, you've often thought, oh, I like that roundabout. You know, every time you've had to drive it, oh, I like this roundabout. I mean, I myself don't like that roundabout because I had a little incident on that roundabout once where I found myself in the wrong lane and I kept going round and round this bloody thing for about 3 or 4 times.
That's not the roundabout's fault, it's yours.
Well, no, it was bad. That's it for another Trip and Ben podcast. I think we've covered quite a range of topics today.
Yeah, we have. It's
I think we've educated, we've entertained, we've provoked.
Mm.
You know, I think people will go away from listening to the podcast feeling richer.
Yeah.
Culturally.
I think the podcast has been like a roundabout this week.
That's it. One you're stuck on, you can't get off.
You're on a journey. We've provided lots of different exits and things to hear and listen to.
Oh, what are you talking about? Absolute balderdash. Honestly.
Oh, let's just put this one out of its misery, shall we?
Well, thanks very much for... If you've made it to the end of this podcast, thank you.
Well done.
Well done. Give yourself a pat on the back. Next week might be a little bit more interesting. Who knows? Please remember to subscribe and review and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to get in touch with us, let us know your favourite roundabout.
Yeah. Or I'd love to read the reviews of this one.
Or maybe your worst roundabout. I enjoyed this particular Trevor and Ben podcast. I particularly like the discussion on the roundabout in Wandsworth.
Mm.
Please let Ben know that he's also one of my favourites and I tend to visit there 3 or 4 times over the weekends. We'll catch you again next week. Take it easy.
Bye.